Hello, this is Melissa. It is Real History, and today is the 28th day of May, 2024. And I am really excited to be talking to Dr. Sean Ross today. Sean is from South Africa. He lived in Switzerland for more than 20 years. He has a really interesting background. He's done a lot, but I think that what I find for the purposes of bringing to you so interesting is the work that he has done to identify to his own satisfaction who is at the top of what I'll call the control system, this ancient brotherhood, this cabal that has run us for millennia and is hell-bent on our destruction. And I wanted to just give a little bit of background as to how I came to have any idea about his work. And that was that Alan Watt and I were sent, I won't be able to say this in German, but we were sent a video that Sean made some years back, I'd say at least 13 or 14 years ago. It might have been longer. It was called The Pharaoh Show. And I think the title was in German, but the Pharaoh Show. And it was very interesting. And I have not, unfortunately, had time to watch it since I watched it with Alan. My memory of it is that Sean walked around a lot of cemeteries in Switzerland, and he just showed obelisk after obelisk. And he went to other places too, and he showed obelisks and Freemasonry symbolism everywhere around Switzerland. So Alan was interested in that. I've had three emails in the last, say, 10 days from people saying, oh, it would be really great if you talked to Sean Ross. And I thought, wow, that is interesting. That's kind of a name. I understand now why there was such a window of silence about you. But I thought, well, that's an interesting idea. So I contacted Sean. He wasn't sure. There was some confusion. I won't go into all of the confusion around it. But he finally figured out that I was talking about Alan Watt. And he said, oh, I remember, you know, some years back, a man with a Scottish accent called me. I sent him some of my writing. Good memory there. So I also want to add, before I bring Sean on to talk with me, that I really wish that it was not me that was having the conversation with Sean, but it was Alan, because I feel, frankly, I feel intimidated to be having this conversation. But I'm going to do the best that I can. Wish that Alan was here. I'll one last final thing here before we start talking. I find that I haven't been able to take in much of his great body of work. And one of the things that we had back and forth in the email exchange, when he was trying to remember who Alan Watt was, he said, I'm a producer, not a consumer. And I understood that right away, because Alan was a producer mostly. He watched that one thing, but he didn't follow anyone. I don't follow anyone. And this isn't about anything except I don't have time, because I'm busy producing my own things and doing my own thing. And that's how Alan was. So I really totally get that. But you'll have to forgive me, listening audience, and especially people who are deeply familiar with Sean's work, that I'm not. So I did the best that I could to cram for this. And what I found is there are places in his conclusions that I don't necessarily agree with. But I get past that disagreement, because what comes through for me is that Sean has a love of humanity and a bit of indignation, to say the very least, that we have been lied to our whole lives, and that he would share in common with Alan, that we live under an illusion, that we are born slaves into a system, and most of us live and die never understanding what's going on. So without a further introduction, I think that's long enough. Here is Sean.
Okay. Yeah. So, well, my name is Sean Ross. It's written, well, Sean, S-E-A-N, and Ross, H-R-O-S-S. My biggest YouTube channel is Guri. That's been written G-I-U-R-E-H. I've got two channels. I had an older channel, which I started like 14 years ago. And YouTube took it off under the depression of the Swiss. And like 8 years ago. And all of a sudden, 2 months ago or 3 months ago, so all of a sudden it was back. So, you know, I had to start all over again 7 years ago. And now I've got two Guri channels, one with a capital G and one with a minuscule G, with a small G. So,
can you tell people what the Guri means?
Yeah, well, I was once, well, in the south of France, the Adi Cathars, and they were hunted down by the Catholic Church. And it was a real crusade by Simon de Montfort. And there's the famous castle of Kiribus and Perpetus. That's another one. And I was sleeping in the castle of Kiribus in those days. It must have been like 30 years ago. The castle, it was still open. Like, now it's all protected and you have to pay to get in. But like 30 years ago, it was still open. So that's in the south of France, going to the Pyrenees Mountains, in between Spain and France. And when I was sleeping there, all of a sudden I was all alone. There was nobody there, of course. It was in the winter time. Then all of a sudden I heard out of the wall, I heard the word Guri, like it is written, G-I-U-R-E-H. And I thought, what? You know? I mean, there's a lot of spirits probably in these castles because of all the bad things going on there and people being walled in alive and a lot of things. And then, you know, 15 years later, I started YouTube. And then I thought by myself, this is the moment to use that name or word for my channel. And I have a lot of, I can't say the word because of the censorship, but there is this tribe in the Middle East, the J people, the J tribe, you know. And I'm using, I made my own vocabulary. Because the moment you use that word of these people, and I've got absolutely nothing against them, you know, but using that word alone, they just take away your video, you know. So I made a lot of words myself, you know, to avoid being censored and having my videos and channels being taken off. Mm-hmm. And it's also in a cynical way saying, you know, stop it, you know, stop this censorship, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a sort of resistance, very cynical. You know, it's maybe the only thing I have against the J people, who I call the jaywalkers, by the way.
Yes, I caught that in one of your videos. That made me laugh.
Yeah, because they're always walking away. They're always running away. They ran away from Pharaoh. Which was a clever thing to do because Pharaoh was much stronger. And then, in their home base now, you know, and 2,000 years ago, they ran away from the Romans and they put up a good fight actually. There were two, Jaywalker Roman wars and, they put up a really good fight, I must say. But what do you do against the Roman Empire, you know? Right. So they ran away again, the Jaywalkers or the Jay Runners. And then they were in Spain, and then they ran away from the Spanish Inquisition, and then they got kicked out of Switzerland in 1776, the same date as America was founded. And finally, they ended up in Germany and in Poland and in Russia and everywhere. So I call them the Jaywalkers, which is not a derogatory name or anything. It's just I'm just trying to avoid the censorship. And unfortunately, the Jaywalkers themselves, they augment the censorship. That's about the only thing I don't like about them. You know,
well. I heard that there's someone, I won't say his name, but he writes and speaks publicly, and he said, I'll just use your term, jaywalkers. He said it used to be that anti-Semitism meant people who don't like jaywalkers. But now anti-Semitism is the people that the jaywalkers don't like. In other words, they preemptively go after you. So there is definite censorship there. And now I want to, before we go too deep into that, I read that piece of writing that you did years ago that you sent to Ellen. And I just went through that this morning. And there is something in there that you said, which I hadn't heard in the few videos that I've been able to watch. You refer to Pharaoh, and we'll get to that, what this ancient lineage, this control lineage. In that writing, you refer to that as Pharaoh-Pharisee, Pharaoh-Pharisee. And I think...
The Pharistocracy.
That's it, yeah.
Wasn't it?
You actually said Pharaoh-Pharisee at one point. If you called it the Pharistocracy, I missed that one, but there is a... I'm just scrolling to see if I can find it. And this really made sense to me. I actually listened yesterday to the talk that you had with Roseanne Barr about 3 years ago, and Roseanne is Jewish, and she had questions. Her big question for you is, and I'm sorry I just used that word, but she said, why don't people like us? Why historically have they not liked us? And I think that what you have done in your videos and in your work is you have shown it's not about that. What's going on here is not about that. And what I'll find sometimes is I'm having a conversation with someone, and I think that we're meeting one another eye to eye, and we're talking about, oh, let's say it's something that they're doing to us. Maybe it's Operation COVID or whatever horrible thing is going on. And I think we're eye to eye. And then all of the sudden, they'll come out with something that lets me know that they have done their homework, they've done their research, and they have decided that all of this is being done by the Jesuits. This is all the Vatican, it's all the Jesuits. And then I'm at a point where I go, oh, okay, so we weren't seeing eye to eye. It's, you know, I just, because I don't go there. Or I'm talking to someone else, and it's the entire, all of the evils of the world, the whole control mechanism is run by the jaywalkers at the top. And I don't go there either, because I do not believe that to be the truth. You, with Roseanne, explained to her how her people have been used down through time, not to even get into breeding and interbreeding. And so there is a natural, you can't help but go there at some point in your researches. If you're serious, you can't help but get there, even if you move off of that. So do you want to talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, about the Jesuits, you know, that's mostly coming out of fanatic American Protestants, because they don't like the Catholics, you know, the Jesuits never had any real power. And actually, it was not Ignatius de Loyola, who was the founder of the Jesuits, but the name already says it, you know, Ignatius de Loyola. He was of the nobility. He was living in a castle.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it was a French guy called Pierre Favre, also called Peter Faber.
Mm-hmm.
And he was lecturing in the very ancient French Sorbonne University, and this is where the Jesuits were actually founded. And of course, as always, the nobility, they took all the credit of it over it and the power over it, as usual. And we have to know that the Catholicism was always the religion of the nobility, of the king. Yeah, it's not very chronologically as I'm talking now, but I should have had explained before about the Knights Templars. But the Knights Templars, they were gnawing at the pillars of the French king. But the French king was too strong, you know, they couldn't get rid of him. He had his soldiers everywhere, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought by themselves, you know, if we take a little percentage off here and do a little bit gnawing here and gnaw at the pillars of his empire, then the empire will fall by itself, you know, if some pillars are unstable. So they tried to take over the papacy. So what did the French king do? In 1309, there was only 2 years after the Knights Templars were arrested in France on that famous Friday the 13th in 1307. So 2 years later, the French king, he kidnapped the Pope for about 78 years. He was in Avignon in France, in an enormous castle. It's so huge, but it still exists. Yeah? So because he knew that the Knights Templars, they wanted to gnaw at the pillars of his empire and kidnap the Pope. So he said to the Pope, well, Popey, you come to me so I can keep an eye on you, you know, and this is the real reason. Which absolutely nobody ever explained in history. No historian ever explained it, you know. Nobody knows why, but it's so simple, actually. So, as that didn't work, and actually the papacy were never in the Vatican before. They first went in the Vatican when the Pope went back to Rome, and then they went immediately into the Vatican. Before they were not. And there were 7 popes in a row. They were in Avignon in France. And the French king was Philip the Fair, Philip the Fourth. What was your question again about the... I was getting there.
I think I had a broad question that was basically saying that I was in agreement with you that it's not the Jesuits and it's not the Jews. There's something above that. To me, the whole Jesuit Catholic Church is just, it's so far out of the realm of what's going on that I can't, it's not even worth that much of a bother over.
Yeah, yeah.
Where
they never had any, yeah.
Well,
the Jesuits never had any armies like the Knights Templars did.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Knights Templars, they didn't succeed in kidnapping the Pope. So they entirely invented a new religion, also a Christian religion, which was Protestantism, which was absolutely like Martin Luther. He was he's also of the German nobility, von Luther.
Mm-hmm.
His wife, Katharina von Bora, that means she's of the German nobility. And in the coat of arms of her mother's side, of Katharina von Bora, there's even a Templar's cross in the coat of arms.
Mm.
And she was a Cistercian before she married Martin Luther, the guy who started Protestantism. And the Cistercian order, they are the predecessors of the Knights Templars. They still have a white robe, So if you put a red cross on it, you're a Knights Templar, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the only monastic order throughout the whole history that could carry a sword, a weapon. There was no other monastic order ever in the history of the monasteries that could carry a sword, only the Cistercians. So they're really the predecessors of the Knights Templars. And the Knights Templars, they were actually founded in France in a Cistercian monastery called the Abbey of Clairvaux. That was Saint Bernard of Clairvaux, himself the son of a Burgundy duke, and in the middle of France, in Troyes. And there are two very big lakes, and one of the lakes is called Lac du Temple, like the lake of the temple,
mm-hmm.
or the Templars, and the other one is called Lac de l'Orient. And the biggest Freemason lodge in France is called Le Grand Orient, the Big Orient.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the Jesuits, they never really had any power. But they were put in place, actually, to go against the Knights Templars and against Protestantism. But they never could, because the Knights Templars, they won the war. And their base is Switzerland. If you look at the Swiss flag, the colors are red and white. They are the colors of the Knights Templars. And again, if you look at the itinerary, so the French, the Pope, he went to Avignon in 1307, 2 years before the Knights Templars got arrested in France in 1307. But the French king, he only arrested about 325. And then 7 years after 1307, about 25 were burned in Paris. In front of the Notre Dame, in fact, right in front, which is called Île de la Cité. And so 16 years before they were rounded up and arrested by the French king, they all made it to Switzerland. And that was in 1291, which is the official date of the foundation of Swaziland. I call them Swaziland.
Yeah.
And so Switzerland was founded officially on August the 1st, which is their national holiday. It's their July 4th, and it's Templar Day, if you like, in 1291. And 1291 also coincides with the end of the Crusades. So they had their Templar's treasure, and they brought it to Switzerland, with which they founded the Swiss banks. So everyone who was looking for the notorious Templar's treasure, well, they went to Switzerland. And the last stronghold of the Knights Templars was Acres, Saint-Jean d'Acre in French. The ruins and the town, they lie in Israel, in the north next to the Lebanese border. And Acres fell on May 18th, 1291, and only 2.5 months later, just to get the time to get back on horseback, they founded Switzerland on August the 1st, 1291. And then later on in history, the Nazis were, in fact, the Nazi Templars. So the hatred towards the Jaywalkers, it never came from the German people. And the proof is that the real Jaywalker language is not Hebrew, but it is Yiddish. For the Orthodox Jaywalkers, it's even forbidden to speak Hebrew, because Hebrew is a holy language which can only be pronounced in their churches, you know. And so the Orthodox guys, they only speak Yiddish, which is a perfect German language. It's about 95% German with some Oriental words in it. And also, so the hatred of the Nazis towards the Jaywalkers never came from the German people. And also the occultism of the Nazis, you know, in the Wevelsburg and with Heinrich Himmler and all that, it didn't come from the German people either. It came from the Knights Templars. And this is what the French king, what he already said. He said the Knights Templars, they are Satanists and they're sodomites. They're very evil and we must burn them alive. And that was not a lie.
This particular part of the conversation, I could go on with you about, I think, for a long time, but there's a little bit of clarification that I want to bring people from your point of view, and I just want to go back into your writing. So I'm going to read a little bit of your writing. You had just now told us about the Last Templar stronghold and the founding of Switzerland. And as it happens in this piece that you wrote, the very next paragraph says this: much of the gold from ancient Egypt and Jerusalem was transported to Switzerland, so we can assume that this is where the famous Templar's treasure has been hoarded. A similar process seems to have happened during the Second World War, where treasure ended up in Switzerland, having been seized from the House of Judah, which would not have included Khazars, Edomites, Kenites, Ashkenazism. That's just the way you spell it. It's Ashkenazism. Ashkenazi, Pharisees, serpent seed, reptiles, or Zionists. So the money of the House of Judah would not have included any of those, and I was hoping that you could elaborate on that just a little bit.
Well, it's a long time ago, but I don't think the last dead sentence I wrote that, maybe Alan changed it.
You know, no. Alan didn't touch this. He didn't touch this. This is something.
I didn't publish that. I don't think so.
Okay.
People have copied it.
Okay.
There were so many. And changed it. Like, you know.
Okay.
But, it's such a long time ago, and there were two parts. There was one part about the Knights Templars, and there was one part. Alan called it the Zurich Files, and it was about the
Alan didn't call it that. I think that's the confusion is that Alan didn't. He only read your writing and personally kept it for his own edification. He didn't share it with anyone else. So how that came to be called the Zurich Files or was changed by someone, I don't know. But that didn't happen from Alan.
But I think he asked me if he could publish it, and I said yes. I think his name, the Scottish guy who called me, I think his name was Alan. Yeah, Alan.
Well, I mean, it's possible, but I know for sure that he did not publish it. There is something, though, if this isn't your writing, then it's okay. If you think somebody else has changed it or tampered with it, then I'll leave it alone and I won't refer to it. But there is something very interesting, and if this is your thought, I'd like to hear about it. You said that the story goes that in 1095 at Clermont, France, Pope Urban II, whose power and popularity were waning, declared war on the Muslim Caliphate, initiating the crusade to recapture Jerusalem.
That was not me.
That's not you. Okay. All right. Well, then I will.
But the Zurich Files, that was mine, but people added things,
okay.
And they, I guess.
Okay.
But what I the basics of it all, in fact, is, and that's why a lot of jaywalkers like Roseanne, well, they like my videos, what I'm explaining, because she told me, she said, listen, Sean, you know, I'm a jaywalker, and we jaywalkers, we don't know why they murdered us. We never did anything wrong. And then you came with your information, and now we understand it. And also their country, I call it the JJ base, where they are for the sake of the censorship. I have a lot of people following me, and also Muslims and Philistines, and you know. And actually, the problem is with the jaywalkers that a lot of people think they are running the world, is that the jaywalkers also have a nobility, like all peoples in the world have a nobility. I mean, the Japanese have a nobility, the Japanese emperor, the Chinese emperor, in Africa, the Africans, I call them the Nubians, because you can't use their name anymore either, you know, that you get censored. So I call them the Nubians, which is just an old pharaonic word for them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the Arabic people, they have also a nobility, and the jaywalkers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like Baron de Rothschild, they are barons, it's a nobility. And there was also King Solomon and King David, the father of King Solomon. And actually the symbol, what they are having in the JJ base, is the seal of Solomon, of King Solomon. So, and they are the rich jaywalkers. And everybody thinks, oh, you look at the jaywalkers, you know, they got all the power in the world. No, it's only the, it's their nobility, just as the French have a nobility or the English have a nobility, and they've always been ruling over us. Every people in the world has a nobility. And the entire nobility, they all come out of Pharaoh.
I think what confuses it for people with the jaywalkers in particular is that what you have, you've got the nobility, the Rothschilds, and all of that. But you have something that I think what you have is a system of organization, the Kahal, that organizes them. They are very cohesive as a group. And so what you'll find, certainly in this country, I don't know that it's this way worldwide, but what you find is what has been referred to as an overrepresentation. So if you look, for instance, at physicians, you see an overrepresentation there. If you look in the education system, there's an overrepresentation. If you look in entertainment, there's a clear overrepresentation. And by overrepresentation, I say if you take the percentage of the population and extrapolate from there what you would expect to find in any given field, you see, okay, if there's X amount of them, then you'd expect this number in this field. And it's oftentimes by magnitude, by orders of magnitude, a higher representation. And so, and then people do their homework and they go, well, I see that those names are dominant in pornography. Those names were key in legalization of abortion. Those names were proponents for gay marriage, et cetera, et cetera. So it complicates the problem of who's in charge.
Yeah. First of all, the people, I'm not talking about their nobility. I'm just talking about the commoners.
Right.
They are not cohesive at all. They all dislike each other. Like in the JJ base, so their country in the Orient, you've got the Sephardic jaywalkers, and then you've got the Ashkenazi. Ashkenazi in Hebrew, it means Germany, in fact. And Sephardic, it means Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't like each other. And they've got a whole, like, Sephardic Jews, or the Ashkenazi, they are usually, they've got more money, they were better educated, and they got all the high positions in the JJ base. And then the Sephardic, they get the lower, you know, and also if you want, apparently, if you want to rent an apartment, there is the same hierarchy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the, there's also the Mizrahi. That means the Oriental jaywalkers. They are further down the line. They're completely almost non-existent, you know. The other ones, they are completely like the Sephardic and the Ashkenazi jaywalkers. They feel themselves superior to the Mizrahi. So they are the Oriental jaywalkers. So, and then there's even the Orthodox ones. They even burn the flag of the JJ base. So they're not cohesive at all. They all, well, they even hate each other. They completely dislike each other. But the ones in power, while behind the laws of the, I call them the pink list killers. It's another code word because of the censorship. So, like a guy with a guy and a girl with a girl.
Mm-hmm.
I call them pink list killers because I'm pink listed. They don't like me because of my videos. And they walk around with T-shirts, "Kill the patriarchy," you know, mm-hmm. openly. They, mm-hmm. they do an appeal for violence. Mm-hmm. So they are killers. I call them the pink list killers, you know. And
is that pink list, L-I-S-T?
The mobility of the jaywalkers.
Yes.
You know, who are very cohesive, as all the nobility in the world, they are very cohesive. You know, they marry with each other, you know, they're like the princess of Spain married to the prince of England and the princess of Germany and all that. They're very cohesive. And they are the ones who are cohesive and changing the laws and, who are like on many key positions. You know, what happened when the jaywalkers, they ran away because of the Romans and the Egyptians and Pharaoh and of the Spanish Inquisition. The jaywalker nobility, they found themselves in the jaywalker base in the Orient without their slaves. And what is the nobility doing without their commoners, without their slaves? Well, they can't do anything because they're not going to work themselves. They never did. They've always been parasiting on the people. So they ran after them. But then they came in countries like Spain and France and Germany. It was the worst for them, where there was already the German nobility and all the land. You know, in those days, the capital was the land. You know, there were no really factories and all that. So that was the real capital, the land. And the land still is the main capital, if you like. So everything was like taking a country like Germany. Everything was already divided up in between the members of the German nobility, you know. And then when the newcomers came, you know, running after their slaves, the jaywalker nobility, well, they didn't have anything, no land. So what did they do? They had no land. So they had to find another income. So they started to deal with money, you know, and because they didn't have any other chance to buy land. And finally, they made a lot of money, like the Rothschilds did, and they could buy castles and land, which the German nobility didn't like. And this is why it ended up in two world wars, actually, with Germany. Because, if you look at the pictures, it was the German nobility, the Emperor William II, he dressed up in a uniform with a helmet, and he said, well, now there's a war. And it was the whole European nobility that sent the European peoples into two world wars. So it was an inner fight in between the nobility. So their brothers and sisters coming from the Orient, the jaywalker nobility, and the already settled nobility in France and England. Well, England is another story. But in Germany, most of all, they didn't want to share the land and their wealth and power with the newcomers. And then the German nobility, they gave jaywalkers a long time, hundreds of years, and their nobility to get out of there, you know. And they didn't. And finally, they did the final solution, you know. They just couldn't wait anymore. They waited already for hundreds of years. And the German emperor, he said, well, I'm satisfied with my German slaves. They are good workers and they just need a beer or two in the evening and they're happy. And we don't want any, of the newcomers. And this finally ended up in two world wars because the Republicans, like the Americans or the Americans, the ones in power in America, let's put it this way, the Freemasons who rule over America and in England, they pushed Germany into a republic. This is what they wanted. And a republic is a horizontal rule because there are many people in a republic, in parliaments and in all key positions all over the country. So in America, that's probably, 200,000 people at least. And this is a horizontal rule. And then a monarchy is a vertical rule because you've got an emperor or a king at the top. Who's deciding all the way down without any intermediary. So this is an internal war within the nobility where the horizontal rule of the Republicans trying to force the ones of the vertical rule in another system. And in England, there is a third possibility, which is called the Order of the Garter, which is a compromise between the monarchy and the republic, sort of. Mm-hmm. And this is why England is not a monarchy, but it's called a constitutional monarchy. So they got the constitution of the republic, and they leave a little bit of the monarchy just for the, for the tourists, like.
Mm-hmm. I think this might be a good time to interject. I don't remember the titles, but I saw a little bit of something that you put out explaining the horizontal and the vertical organization of religion. And then I noticed that you did that just as you just explained that within the republic / democracy versus a monarchy. In the religious, in your explanation of the way that religions are organized, you said the Catholic Church is a vertical religion, top down. The Pope is God's representative on earth. So it's God, the Pope, and, you know, down the hierarchy. And then the Protestants were organized as the horizontal religion. They're all, this is all done by committees or peers of brothers.
The elders.
Okay.
In the Protestant church is called the elders.
Yeah. Now, there was something in that video that is very interesting, because what you have just said in words, the visualization of that is a cross. You have a vertical line and a horizontal line.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is why Mr. Jesus, Rome at this time, during the Jaywalker Roman Wars, at this time, Rome was a republic. They had a Senate, and there were many people ruling the country. So it was a horizontal rule. And then, Mr. Jesus, it says in the Bible, he's from the house of David, which is King David. And this is why they call him the king of the Jaywalkers, Inri. Jesus of Nazareth, Rex Judea, And this was the problem. The Romans, they were afraid that in the JJ base, they were going to put up a new vertical rule with the king of the Jaywalkers at the head, as he is from the house of David. So Ben David, as they say. So this is the internal war within the nobility. And the commoners, the people, they have no idea what's really going on. Actually, there never have been any religious wars. All the wars are internal wars of the nobility. And the nobility, they come out of Pharaoh, which I can explain that too, if you want, afterwards, how that is, how that came to place. So... And this is why we have the cross, actually. And as a joke, the Romans, they put them on a cross, and they said, okay, well, we show you the internal wall between the vertical rule and the horizontal rule. We nail you on a cross. And you can see it. I mean, the Catholic Church, it's the church of the nobility traditionally. And it has, as you said, it has the Pope at the head, so it's a vertical rule. The Pope is really deciding. And the Protestant church is a Templar church, really. And it has the same Republican setup with several people ruling the whole thing, which is called the elders in the Protestant church.
There was something I unfortunately didn't have the time to see very much of this video that you put out on the organization of the churches, vertical versus horizontal. But I got so far as to see the visual explanation of the different organizations in Protestantism around the world. And this was fascinating to me. I'd never seen this. What you show country by country in Protestantism is the top organization of the Protestants is represented always in their logo by a cross with a bird coming out of it, which we're told is the dove or a pigeon or whatever. But as you explained, what dove have you ever seen doing a downward dive? This is a bird of prey, a predator. This is a hawk, which I thought this was a very interesting thing. No one had ever pointed that out to me, so.
Yeah, it's a falcon, and a falcon. It stands for Horus, falcon. And Horus is also the sun bearer, if you like. And Mr. Jesus, he's always depicted with the sun behind his head, and, you know, mm-hmm. and it even says he's the sun and things like this. This is all Horus. And it's also like, you know, if you've seen this video, 1984, you got Room 101.
Right.
And this is, in the middle, the O is the sun. And the one at each side depicts the wings of Horus. And it's the same in the sun hieroglyph, which I showed in my first video, the Pharaoh show, which is everywhere. They use it as a secret symbol. It's a depiction of Horus with his wings. And this is the same. The Nazis had this. And it's not a Nazi eagle. It's a falcon. And actually, the symbol in France and in Belgium for the Protestant church, they have a Templar's cross. And then this falcon diving down from the Templar's cross. It says it all. But, you know, everything is a lie. They lie about everything. We, the commoners, we're only there to work for them. Mm-hmm. And the value of a commoner is being depicted in man hours. And so they can extract taxes of you. And the taxes have been invented by the nobility anyway. You know, like in the Middle Ages, they said to the people, they said, well, we're going to have a marriage for the next 2 weeks. We're going to party. We need all your bread, all your meat, the wine, and your grandmothers to clean up, and your daughters, you know, to dance and the rest. You know, they raped them in the castle with the jus primae noctis. So actually, the white race is the most terrorized race in the whole history of mankind. For the Nubians, you know, being taken as slaves to the America, it lasted only like 100 years or something, you know, not very long. Well, it's quite a long time. But compared already, you know, in the feudal system, the Europeans, they were slaves in a feudal system. The man had to work until their death. And anybody who opened up his mouth who got severely tortured in the dungeon, they raped our women through the jus primae noctis in the castle. Mm-hmm. And it lasted about 1,000 years. And before that, during the Roman times, 75% of the white race, they were slaves. So for the white race, it's been going on for 2,000 years, being a slave. And apparently, this is interesting. A lot of Native Americans. So I've got a lot of Native Americans writing me And they say, well, finally we got the answer, what really happened, because we see that the white man, well, he's not really in power, you know, looking at America, so there's something fishy going on. And I give them all the answers, that the ones behind the genocide on the Native Americans and the rest of humanity is the nobility. And it was also the nobility having a white skin color who took the Nubian slaves to the America. You know, the normal white commoners, they didn't know anything of it, and they wouldn't even do a thing like this, you know. And in France, this is very important. In France, I'm in France now, there are 35,000 castles still to be seen. And all these castles, most of them, they were built around the year 1000. So this implies that we don't have any French or European kings, because in the other countries it's the same, in Germany and France. All the castles are about built in the year 1000. So this implies that we don't have any European kings, because otherwise we would have had castles like 6,000 years ago. But they're all built around the year 1000. So this means there must have been an aristocratic invasion, taking the white race as slaves and raping our women. So the question is, where do they come from all of a sudden, taking over all the power? Well, they found out like 20 years ago with a genetic analysis that more than 50% of the Europeans, they have pharaonic genetics. It's official, but they don't talk about it a lot, obviously. So that means 50% of the Europeans have nothing, and the other 50% have about 2 or 3% of pharaonic genetics. And people are asking themselves, well, how is this possible? Like in the Middle Ages, there were no airplanes and no motorways or highways, as you call it over there. So there was no international communication. So how did they do it? Well, it's very simple, Melissa. They raped the women in the castle. So the aristocracy, they injected their pharaonic genetics into the whole of our women, if you understand what I mean. So this means that the nobility, who has always been ruling whether you know, over all the peoples of the world, that they are pure pharaohs. And this is why President Macron here, the first time he got elected, he went celebrating in front of the pyramid of the Louvre. And around the big pyramid of the Louvre in Paris are three little pyramids. And one of them is called the Pyramid of Mikrinos. There was a pharaoh called Mikrinos. It's like Macronos. It's the same dude.
This is very fascinating, and this is where I have some questions. I don't even want to characterize it as a disagreement, but I do have questions. But before we, if I can just completely interrupt this train of thought, what I'd like to do is go back to your beginnings, as it were, and find out a bit of your history that would take us to the point of your inquiry. I understand that you studied history. I also understand that one of the fields of your university study was demotics, which is the written language of ancient Egypt. But I'd like to hear, you came from South Africa. Can you share a bit of your background and why this became the driving force of your life?
Yeah, there are I've got like three sources, and one of the sources is that I studied history at university, and the other source is I infiltrated neo-Nazis for a very long time, many, many years, and I finally ended up at the top of the neo-Nazis, which is called the Octagon Organization.
Did you infiltrate for your own personal interest, or was this you tasked with this job by
Yes, for my own personal interest. Okay. I wanted to know what was going on. And actually, when I did it, for instance, in Germany, I was infiltrating like neo-Nazis, and they were very kind with me, actually. They invited me home for dinner. I remember one time I was like with 200 neo-Nazis, and they were all singing like, on Deutschland, you know, Germany, on Deutsch, and I couldn't really sing it, you know, and I thought, oh God, I hope nobody's watching my lips. And then all of a sudden they went like, on tralali, tralala, and then I could sing, you know, and I remember this. And I would never betray them, or I would never harm them, because I knew they were just lost souls who like now with the people in the internet who see, you know, something is wrong.
Right.
And these kids, they had the same feeling. Something is wrong. But unfortunately, they took the wrong road, you know, like blaming the jaywalkers and blaming the immigrants. Like, but the real enemy is the enemy within. And so I woke up a lot of guys, and I even managed to have an exit the neo-Nazi movement. Just like a father, you know, I tried to help him, you know, so I never betrayed anyone, and I did it for myself.
Okay.
And the Octagon organization, they are in Switzerland, so that's their base. Switzerland is the base of Pharaoh. It's the base of all evil.
What prompted you to leave South Africa?
I'm still answering your question. the third reason or the third source of my information is, well, in South Africa, there are 5 million whites, or there were when I left South Africa like 40 years ago. 2 million are Brits because of the British invasion. And 3 million are called Boers. They have a sort of a Flemish language, a medieval Flemish Dutch-like language. But what people don't know is that most of them, they are not Dutch or Flemish. They are French. And why? Because, South Africa was founded in 1652. And right before, there was the persecution of the Huguenots. So they escaped, like, north to the Netherlands and to East Prussia. And historians, they know that they didn't all get decapitated under the guillotine and all that, or murdered by the French. When the possibility came to go to South Africa, they all took the boat. And first of all, they already had their names changed and they had the language changed because their lives depended on it. And then there was also the dissident nobility already in the years before the revolution, because you could see the revolution coming up already hundreds of years ago with a lot of struggles and killings and all that, which is, of course, again, about the internal war within the nobility in between the vertical and the horizontal rule, which I will explain you later on, if you like. Mm-hmm. And so my family actually was of the most of all of the dissident nobility of the house of Saint-Croix-Rose du Plessis. And this is why we spoke French at home. Next to English, this is why I speak French. And from generation to generation, for about 350 years, over 350 years since we were in South Africa, from 1652 onwards, from the beginning, the real history of Europe was being transmitted from one generation to the other. And the interesting thing was that the child... Well, I was 12 years old. That was the practice when the child was like 12 years old. The initiation of the real history, it took place from the age of 12 years old. And it was not being done by the parents, but by the uncles and the aunties. Because we knew that a child doesn't... necessarily accept something from his parents. You know, there's always the strife, you know, between the father and his son. And so we use the uncles, you know. So my uncles, they taught me the real history. So now I'm back in France, Mike, and I'm like stirring up the shits, so to speak, you know, giving the real information to the commoners, because actually, I'm a traitor, and my life is in danger because of this, which I had to feel also in the Pharaoh's base called Switzerland, the base of Pharaoh and the base of the Nazi Templars. And so I'm actually not allowed to do what I do, but I see the only way to save the world and the whole humanity and everything is to wake up the commoners. Because otherwise they will destroy the whole world. It will end up in a nuclear war, and they will destroy everything because of this internal war. And this is also the thing going on in Gaza and in the Middle East now, because the JJ base, so again, this is the Jaywalker base in the Middle East, it's a republic. And this is why America will always defend the JJ base, because America is the most important republic in the world, and the JJ base is their little republican baby, like in the Middle East. And then there are like countries like Saudi Arabia and the Emirates, like an emir, that's a mm-hmm. That's the nobility. It's like a count or a marquis or in European like language. So it's called the Emirates with an emir, which is actually an absolute monarchy, not like England, which is a constitutional monarchy. They've got the constitution of the Republic of the Knights Templars due to the compromise of the Order of the Garter. And in the Middle East, like Saudi Arabia, is also an absolute monarchy, which is a vertical rule. Mm-hmm. And the problem is actually not so much Iran, although Iran is also it's a theocratical vertical rule with the Ayatollah at the head, but they are not really the problem. The problem is like Saudi Arabia, and at the moment it's popping out that Saudi Arabia is becoming the problem. And also countries like Qatar, which is also of the Emirates, they are the real problem, financing Hamas and all this. So the war in Gaza is actually the same thing, because the Philistines, you know, I can't use the other word probably, so I call them the Philistines. In Gaza, there are even castles, which I showed in one of my last videos, and there were sultans, and there was the nobility also living in Gaza. And they sort of missed the boats, you know, getting into the 21st century, even the 20th century. They never had any factories. They didn't get rich. They still were depending on the land as the only capitalist or the only capital having and their commoners working for them. Whereas the Jaywalkers, when they headed down to the JJ base, they took all the know-how and the factories with them and the intelligence and building up factories and all that. So Middle East, they missed the boat. And now they stayed very poor, and they saw that the JJ base, it's a wealthy country and a very high-tech country. So the only thing they can do now is just grab it, everything for which the Jaywalkers work for, and their nobility, like Baron de Rothschild, who basically own the JJ base. So this is actually the war, and they don't want the slaves and the commoners to know this, because then the chaos would be complete when the whole world would know this. But I see it as the only solution to wake up the entire humanity to this, because it's enough now. We have been living in 2,000 years of wars without end because of this inner war, which already started, you know, during the Roman Empire with the cross and Mr. Jesus and all that.
Well, you have this other element that's going on there that I'm sure you don't see it as so simple as just... I don't remember what you called them, but those other people there who didn't bring themselves into the 21st century with manufacture and they're just living off the land. The other element is that the ruling elite, they brought in with the Balfour Declaration what they said 100 years ago. They knew they were creating an Ulster in the Middle East. In other words, Balfour, Lord Balfour, again, we're talking about, you know, the aristocracy, Lord Balfour and Lord Rothschild made this declaration. We're going to have this land there. So it seems that the ruling elite put everything, it's hard for me to accept that the success of the J in that area is based on their hard work when they're supported from the West by the aristocracy in the U.S. and they're supported from the U.K. and Europe by that aristocracy who created this pocket, this place in the first place. So I don't think this is just hard work and ingenuity of the common average J in that region. It's been heavily propped up to the tune of billions out of this country alone for, you know, my whole life.
No, I mean, the American billions, they're also going to countries like Egypt and Jordan. They also get billions of money from America. Even Iran got billions, you know, under Obama. You probably heard about it. It's a big scandal, actually, but they hardly talk about it. It's called development money. But this money, it never goes to the people. Where does it go to? It goes to developing the system. Mm-hmm. More police, more army, you know, to suppress the people. Whether it is in the JJ base in Egypt or in any of those countries, it's the development money is to develop the system to suppress the commoners and the people. So the jaywalkers themselves, they never got any money. Actually, there's a lot of poverty in the JJ base among the jaywalkers, especially the Orthodox ones, because with the Orthodox guys, you know, the men, they don't work. It's only the women who work. They only study their holy books the whole day, like wigging their heads the whole day, you know. They don't work. Yeah, and this was also the problem for the German emperor. Mm-hmm. Because when a commoner doesn't work, you can't extract any taxes. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason to keep them in the empire. You know, the same thing for gypsies. They don't work either. They steal, you know, and they even say it themselves, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's all the nobility. And you said it by yourself, you know, the Balfour Declaration. There was Lord Balfour. There was another lord, he was actually the governor of South Africa, he was a real butcher. And then there was a third lord, there were three of them.
Yes.
And then there was also Rothschild.
Yes.
I don't recall the names. And so they were all of the nobility. And why? As I told you, you know, the commoners, they ran away from the Romans. And the jaywalker nobility, they found themselves back in the JJ base without their slaves. So they ran back. So they were not accepted in Europe, especially by the German and the French emperor, which led to wars, which we, the people, the Europeans, had to fight for them. And so in order to bring them back, you know, the jaywalker nobility, they had to bring their slaves back to the JJ base to finally have their country with their slaves. So Zionism is not by the people.
Mm-hmm.
It's by the nobility. You know,
right,
they just
right.
wanted to get their slaves back to where they belong because they were not accepted in Europe. Not by the people. That was not the problem. Except in Poland and in Russia, maybe, with a lot of pogroms. But in Western Europe, it was never really a problem. But by the nobility. The nobility didn't want the jaywalkers there, and especially not the jaywalker nobility. They just had to go back, and this is the reason of Zionism. And then, there, of course, there's also the religious Zionism, which is a completely different thing.
Mm-hmm.
The religious guys, they say, well, God dispersed us in the whole world because we didn't obey or something, which is complete nonsense. Of course, it's very logical. The diaspora happened. They ran out in the world because they had to escape the Romans. The Romans wanted to genocide all the jaywalkers. So what did they do? They ran, you know, as the only option they had left, which was, I think it's a good thing to do. Otherwise, they would have all been gone, probably. And this is a real problem. All wars and all genocides, it's all by the nobility, you know, all of them.
Well, because wars cost a fortune, and so it would have to be by them. You know what I mean? It takes a lot of planning and a lot of money to go into it. Do you want to talk just a little bit about your personal experience being persecuted? You've got a family, I'm assuming. You're just living your life, pursuing what is interesting to you intellectually. And then you get crosshairs with the establishment. Do you want to talk about that period?
I got severely terrorized in Switzerland. I got arrested a couple of times by an anti-terrorist squad, even in front of my children. There were guys, hooded guys, with assault rifles. They put three guns in my head. It ended up in the biggest Swiss newspaper, and they were talking about me all the time in the big newspapers. Because Switzerland really has the laws of silence. Maybe you notice it, but of course, laws of silence, you don't particularly notice them, because that's why they call the laws of silence. None of the media, they never talk about Switzerland, you know, never. Mm-hmm. Because this is the base of it all. All the money is there. All the banks are actually Swiss banks. Even the Bank of America is a Swiss bank, or the Bank of England. And there was actually, in the 19th century, the director of the Bank of England, he was Swiss.
Mm-hmm.
And his name was Haldeman. And Haldeman is a very, very powerful Swiss aristocratic family. I mean, the biggest political scandal in America was the Watergate scandal. And who was behind it? It was Richard Nixon's advisor, his political advisor, called Bob Haldeman. There you go. The mother of Elon Musk, the guy who wants to connect us to a computer. And actually, 2 days ago, I saw this movie, Atlas, a new movie where they show it, how it's so great to be connected to a computer and it will save the world and everything. They're really preparing us for it. And So Elon Musk's his mother, she's a Haldeman,
mm-hmm.
you know, Swiss.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the governor of Quebec, he was a Haldeman, a very powerful family. People are only talking about Rothschild,
right.
But they never talk about these Swiss powerful families. They're even more powerful. And this governor, Haldeman of Quebec, he was a friend of the Colonel Bouquet. And he was of Swiss descent. He was born in Switzerland. And he was a colonel in the American army, killing Indians. And Colonel Bouquet, he was the one who gave the infested blankets to the to the Indians,
yes,
so they
yeah.
all die.
Yeah.
It's all Swiss.
Yeah.
Even General Custer, he was of Swiss descent, you know, the squaw killer. They all are. It's all Swiss. And even the there was a Swiss concentration camp in America, and the commandant was Henry Wirth, a Swiss. He was the commandant of a Swiss concentration camp in America, where many Americans, they were murdered during the Civil War. They're all Swiss. It's always Swiss, because Switzerland was founded by the Knights Templars. And what was your question again?
Well, my question was about your personal life and your own misfortune at the hands of these. Did your family remain intact after this?
Yeah, well, I had to leave Switzerland 9 years ago.
So your family's still there?
Even once I was walking in the forest and the police, they came shooting at me, you know.
Is your family still there?
Yeah, I've got 3 children and my wife. I'm still together with my wife, but we hardly ever see each other. My children grew up without their father. Switzerland really is the base of all evil. And for those who are like Christians, I am not. I don't have any religion at all. You know, it says in the book of Revelation, there is the beast with the 7 heads. Well, let me tell you, Switzerland has 7 heads of state. They're being called the, in German, Bundesrat, I've got the name in English, but they got 7 presidents all at the same time. And these 7 presidents, the heads of state, they divide 10 ministries amongst each other. So this is the beast with the 7 heads and the 10 horns. And actually, it also says in the Bible, and again, I'm not Christian and no religion at all, because all these religions, they all come from Pharaoh anyway. Like the 10 commandments, they you can find them in the 42 principalities of the goddess Maat, all of them, you know. And it says that there are the 7 hills where the beast will rise, and that the 7 hills are at the same time 7 kings. And the only place in the world where this is in Switzerland. And it's called the 7 Kurfürsten, the 7 during the Holy Roman Empire, which was actually a Germanic Empire, like in the 8th century, with Karl the Great and all that, they had 7 prince electors who elected the emperor. 3 of them were ecclesiastical, and 4 of them were like earthly kings. So Kurfürsten, it means the prince elector. And these mountains, these hills, actually, well, they are 2,500 meters, but the 7 mountains, actually, they the difference of height in between each other is like 100 meters or 200 meters. So they're actually like 7 hills, you know. And these hills, they're at the same time 7 kings or the 7 prince electors. And the prince electors, they usually were kings, the four of them, and even the other 3. So this is the only place in the world where the 7 hills are 7 kings. And it is in Switzerland at a big lake, which is called Walensee. I made a video about it, which was called Helvetic Horror Heidi on one of my channels. Yeah. Actually, the story of Heidi, it also is playing there, you know, the woman, what was her name again? Susanna, well, I forgot her name, but the author who wrote Heidi, and the whole book is playing exactly there where the 7 hills are. Johanna Spyri, that was the name of the author. Mm-hmm. And she was a friend of Richard Wagner. And Wagner, he was a big jaywalker hater. He was the favorite composer of Adolf Hitler.
Yes.
And Wagner, at a certain moment of his life, well, he was not only the friend of the author of Heidi books, which is very related to nationalism and Nazism, the whole Heidi thing, you know. It's sacred to Nazis and neo-Nazis. And Wagner, at a certain time, he was living in the Villa Schönberg in Zurich. And in 1923, on August the 30th, they invited Hitler in the Villa Schönberg, where there was a Swiss general called Ulrich Wille Jr., from the German high nobility of von Bismarck, who financed Hitler. And they were in this... in the Villa Schönberg, where also 100 years before Richard Wagner lived for a certain period of his life. And so last year, it was exactly 100 years ago, you know, because it happened in 1923 on August the 3rd. So August the 30th last year, the Swiss celebrated it, that it was 100 years ago. They celebrated the centennial that Hitler was in Zurich, where he got financed. And this is why the Nazis never took Switzerland. It's the same with the Hamas, you know. The Hamas, they even were in Swiss Parliament. I made a video about it on my channel, Gure. The Swiss financed the Hamas, so they would never have any terrorist attacks of the Muslim guys in Switzerland. And as a matter of fact, it's the only country in Europe where they never had any terrorist attacks, which is quite funny, actually, but quite peculiar.
Well,
and there is a reason, and
this might be a good place to remind people. A lot of people are going to know just how much is headquartered in Switzerland, but it might be a good place to talk about everything that is in Switzerland, like the World Economic Forum gathering at Davos every year. Mm-hmm. Like, so if you want to just share with listeners, everything that is headquartered in Switzerland is kind of mind-boggling when you think about it, much more than banks.
Yeah. But first of all, there is no Swiss people, because the definition of a people is that a people has one language, mm-hmm. and a people has one skin color. This is not something racial or something. I can't change it. This is just the definition of a people. That's it, you know. I can't change that, you know. So you can't imagine, you know, like the French, like they speak French, Italian, and German, and Greco-Romanic. four languages in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. Can anybody there imagine that the French and the German, they just, in the deep Middle Ages, in 1291, they just got together and said, oh, we like each other so much, and let's make a country together, and let's invite the Italians as well. Well, who the hell can imagine this? Well, I can't. So, and they still don't even like each other today in Switzerland, the ones who speak French and the ones who speak German. They're being squeezed together in a country, but they don't even talk to each other. There's no, they call it the Rustigrabe. You know, they have a, there's a big border actually, you know. And, so, when the people didn't do this, then there must have been an external force, you know, putting these people together. And that force were the Knights Templars. So, the ones who speak German, they can do their dirty business and infiltrate Germany. The ones who speak French, they can go to the West and do the same dirty things in France. The ones who speak Italian, they can act towards Italy, to the south. And the ones who speak Rhetoromanic, they can go to the east. So they can go to all directions, you know, which is also sort of the logo of the NATO, you know. It's like going north, west, east, and south, mm-hmm. with an arrow-like sort of thing. And the CIA has the same sort of thing. And actually, the first director of the CIA was Alan Dulles of Swiss descent. Also, the FBI director, doing it for 50 years.
Hoover.
Yeah, Hoover, yeah, J. Edgar Hoover. His real name was Hoover, Swiss.
Mm.
And also the president, Herbert Hoover, he was also a Hoover. And I made a comparison in my channel of Herbert Hoover and J., or they also call him Gay Edgar Hoover, because he was sort of, you know.
He just liked women's dresses, that's all.
Yeah, they look like twins. They look the same. It's the same family, Hoover. And also President Eisenhower, also of Swiss descent. Even Obama is of Swiss descent. You know, so your country is being ruled by the Swiss. You know, they it's not the jaywalkers. It's complete nonsense. They have no power at all, except their nobility, of course. But it's the Swiss and their nobility and the Nazi Templars, they rule the U.S.
Huh? Okay, and, there's a couple of things here that are interesting to me about what you just said, but I want to go back now, if we can, into the idea of Pharaoh, and this is where. For me, I would say I might diverge a little bit with conclusions. One thing is that if you look at ancient Egypt, you have different periods, different rulers. They even have different bloodlines. They come from different parts of the world. And then before you even have an ancient Egypt, you've got Sumeria. But I want to back that up just a little bit to Alan Watt. Now, this would take us out to perhaps what we can't document with archaeological finds or history. But there were things that Alan researched that led him to believe that we were much, much older by many, many thousands of years, millennia perhaps, than was acknowledged. One of the reasons would be that how do you know what a precession is in astrological terms if you haven't had people observing one precession of 26,000 years to note that that is a precession, and then you take that time out, we're looking at Egypt as a birthplace of civilization. But if you look at the Sumerians, they have some rather similar ways of describing their cosmology that talk about sun worship and their sun god. And if you look at some Sumerian writing, this is how they characterize how they came to be. you'll find writing where it says, mm-hmm. we have a civilization, so that's our architecture and our agricultural systems and all of this, and the people then were created into an existing system. That's if you read the mythology of Sumeria, you have a people that were born into or somehow created into a system that was already on the go. So when you talk about Pharaoh and you're talking about bloodlines so these are just things that I'm throwing out. I'm not super familiar with your work, but what I've seen, you talk about 50% of Europeans having the pharaonic DNA. And that's a lot of Europeans with it, to the point then that would be beyond a ruling aristocracy. Now, you did say that's varying degrees of it, but what pharaonic DNA are we talking about? Are we talking about, because the races of the pharaohs themselves were different. And
so, yeah, I've got a simple question for you.
Yes.
You believe also that nowadays the world is being ruled through Freemasonry, right?
I definitely think that Freemasonry is a tool. I don't think Freemasons are at the top of the food chain.
Yeah,
but I think
then
that
my question would be, then why do the Freemasons always show all these things from Egypt and not from Sumeria? They always show pyramids, obelisks, Isis, Horus, the all-seeing eye, but none of the things from Sumeria.
The Sumerians had the ziggurat. And the ziggurat is very similar to a pyramid.
Yeah, it's a bit of a rudimentary pyramid.
It is, but, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that we're not run by the symbolism that came out of Egypt. The symbolism. But the DNA and the blood, I'm not convinced of that.
If I translate the word Sumeria in Demotic Pharaonic language, because the hieroglyphs were only for the temples,
mm-hmm.
so the gods and the demons could see an image, but the written language is called Demotic. And if I translate Sumeria, Me, it means the pyramid, Ri is the sun, and A, it means big or pregnant, so it means the pyramid was born out of the sun. That's where they probably come from. I don't know, these pharaohs. So the word Sumeria is very pharaonic. Also, there's a lot of talking about the Khazars and Khazaria. Well, Khazaria is the same thing. Ka, in pharaonic, it means the soul, as mm-hmm. long as you live,
mm-hmm.
like the Japanese ki. It's the same thing. And Ba is the soul. When you die, you take that with you.
Mm-hmm.
So the soul, and Sar, it means the king or pharaoh. Sar, like in a sarcophagus.
Mm-hmm.
It's a box to put the pharaoh in. So Khazar, it means the soul of pharaohs or the soul of kings. It means they are there. You know, the pharaonic nobility is there. And from Egypt, there was an expansion. You know, first going to Persia, and also to Mesopotamia and Sumeria. Then they went to Greece, and then they went to Rome, and then they went to the north of Europe, which is also the way the civilization added up. It started in Egypt officially, then to Greece, and then to Rome, and then to the rest of the world and to northern Europe. And so there was an expansion. They were the same pharaohs of pharaonic nobility ruling in Sumeria, and they came from Egypt. And for those who believe or are Christians, it says in the Bible, and again, I'm not a Christian, but I read the Bible, the whole Bible, and the Quran as well, that the Egyptians are the oldest people in the world. And the Bible is a very interesting historical book as well. So, to answer your question, there's a similarity, but the ones ruling in Sumeria, they came from Egypt. There was the expansion they were doing. So at the moment, because there were two Egypts, there was the Upper Egypt in the south, mm-hmm. which is called the White House, the Perhet, which means the White House. And this schism they had was not a religious one, you know, between Akhenaton and the priests of Lower Egypt, which is called the Red House or the Pertasser. It had nothing to do with religion. It's the same as in the Middle East now. The war is not about religion. It's all about the nobility. It's the same as the 30-year war in Europe. It was not about religion. It was all about the nobility and the vertical rule and the horizontal rule. And it was the same in Egypt. There was the heretic pharaoh, Akhenaton. He already tried the new republican system of the horizontal rule. Mm-hmm. And this is why they had the internal rule. And at a certain moment, they made peace and they put the two crowns, the red crown and the white crown of the White House, they put it together. And from that moment on, they had the United Kingdom of Pharaoh of Egypt. And then they were very powerful and they could start their expansion and conquering the whole world and all the tribes of the world. Because basically we are all tribes. All the people of the world, all the peoples, we are tribes. Like the Native Americans. And like the Nubians and the Jaywalkers, the Arabic people, we're all tribes. And in Europe, the tribes, they were living in dirt huts, like the Native Americans. They were running around in a bearskin with a spear. They couldn't read or write. And they were living in dirt huts made out of shit and out of earth, a little bit of straw in it, not even with wood. They were the typical round houses of the Celts and also the Germanics. And the European peoples, they never built in stone. And the first ones who built in stone, that was the nobility with their castles. And they continued to build in Europe as they were used to at River Nile, building in stone their obelisks and pyramids and Karnak and even castles. There are castles like the castle of Wuhan in Egypt, built in ancient Egypt, which looks like a medieval European castle. Exactly the same. So the Europeans, they are no more tribes like the Native Americans. The same. We are all tribes. That's why the Native Americans, they say like, homi takuyasin, we're all brothers. And in fact, we are all brothers. And we're all being dominated by these pharaohs. We're also in Sumeria.
I think that this is, I guess I'll just venture out here. There was something that you said to Roseanne Barr in conversation towards the end of this, and I know you won't remember the conversation that you had 3 years ago, and why should you? But I thought that this was an interesting point for me, something that I could wrap my head around or a place that I could dive in. You said to her that in studying the Demotic writing of Egypt, that you could see that these people, the pharaohs, were talking about where they came from. And you said, I can't really venture out a guess there because I'm a historian. But it would look, if you're reading their writing, it would seem that they might come from the stars or the sun or, you know, somewhere beyond here. And you said they have an incredible intelligence. They are not like us. And my view of this, and you're also talking about what you get in the Bible, and at points you've talked about this pharaoh group and the creation of religions. You didn't venture the guess that they might be from somewhere else because you said, I'm a historian, but that the superior intellect would lead you to think that they are not us, that they are different than us. So what you're talking about is a bloodline, a pharaonic bloodline, and that they have, by first night, by the law of first night and the raping of European women, that they have spread their seed, and that this is what they do wherever they go in and conquer. They spread their seed and they run tight control. The first night, that's a fact. That the royals have taken peasants and bred with them, this is a fact. This is undisputable. But I believe that even though we may not have had the benefit of historians telling us, well, we discovered this ruin or this castle or this thing that we believe existed in 40,000 BC, I still believe that there is evidence that satisfies me that we are much, much older than Egypt. That historians now, with what they have given us to work with, say that this is the birthplace of civilization. Well, I would say it's the birthplace of the oldest civilization that we have been allowed to know about. That's all. And I'll go out, because I'm not a historian, I'm just going to let my mind go where it goes. I don't think that these people are superior because of their breeding. I think what you see when you have lots of inbreeding, royalty has always bred even with siblings, first cousins. They have bred for specific traits, just like as it trickles out into the lesser nobility and you get into eugenics, breeding programs tend to end up with an incredible preponderance of psychopaths. So I don't look at this ruling elite as having a superior intellect. I just believe that they are much more cunning than the average peasant. That is different. That kind of intelligence is different than creator-given ability to use your mind. And what this ancient system has done has been to imprison the mind. So we play under the illusion that they have given us, this is how old you are, this is the first civilization, these are the structures in that civilization, these are the religions that we created to give you in these civilizations, and because they gave us this, these are the artifacts. We fight over the artifacts that were given to us. So what tribe are you in, and then what religion has sprung up around your tribe? That has all been given to us by these ancient rulers. I just happen to think, I'm going to go out on a limb, you said you weren't going to go to, they came from afar, they came from a star, they came from a sun. I'm going to say, I think that what we're looking at would be akin to the closest that we have in our language or ability to talk about it would be Luciferian. And if I talk about fallen angels, that's going to sound as far out to some people as ancient aliens or ancient astronauts.
Yeah, wait. I think it was Roseanne who asked me that question, but
yes.
I'm not sure if it's still in the interview, because her son Jake, who did all the editing and whatever, all the electronic stuff, because Roseanne doesn't know, you know, she He heavily censored the video because it was first uploaded and there were already loads of views. I don't know, like almost 100,000 views or something. And then he took it off for a few days. He censored it. He took about 20% off.
Really?
You know, he completely censored it.
Wow.
Because that was in the time, there was this scandal about Roseanne. She couldn't do her show anymore, and she was being treated as a racist. And I talked about Nubians, you know, in something, I don't remember what. And he was afraid for his mother, and he took like 20% of the interview off. And then he uploaded it again, and then they had to start counting again. And so that's why it's only like 40,000 views or something. But there were already far more. And
well,
so
that's interesting.
Yeah, probably that part about Egypt, maybe he took it off as well. I don't know.
Well, there was
anyway,
a little bit in there.
As you said, I mean, all genius, which is a fact, all genius, being a genius is usually next to being crazy, you know. So it doesn't necessarily be because of the blood and intermarrying in the family, you know.
You did not let yourself go there with Roseanne as to speculate where these people originated.
Mm-hmm.
But you did say it's you know, that based on your understanding and reading of the demotic language of ancient Egypt, that mm-hmm. there were things there that led you to think that, yes, it's possible that they were not human, that they came from somewhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. But as an academic, I only do facts.
Yes,
so
and
I can have my ideas by myself, but as an academic, I'm not really allowed to say or what I, you know, because I have no proofs for that, you know.
I respect that. It's just what interesting to me because the ancient alien idea was popularized by von Daniken, who is Swiss.
Yeah.
He's Swiss, and he was a fraudster. He was imprisoned for committing fraud, and it was an ex-Nazi, also Swiss. I don't remember his name, but who approached von Daniken. I actually think that the whole idea of the ancient alien or the ancient astronaut came from this other gentleman whose name I can't recall, and he simply used von Daniken as the name and the promoter of the idea. But I just find it very interesting that this whole idea that the pharaonic line could have been ancient aliens was invented by Swiss people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Switzerland is that base. There was this French philosopher, Voltaire. He was also in Switzerland, like in the 19th century. And he said half of the Swiss population, they live in paradise, and the other half live in hell. So they got the commoners, the real slaves, you know, they really lived in hell.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got the other half, they are pure pharaohs, you know, because it's their base. And this is the neutrality about Switzerland. For you and me, commoners, Switzerland is not neutral at all. But if you are of the nobility, and in 1978, for instance, there was the Prince of Savoie. There was a huge empire, the Empire of Savoie. And he is the king of Italy, he was of the house of Savoie. His father was of the house of Savoie, the king of Italy. And because the king of Italy collaborated with the fascist and Mussolini, in 1945, the whole family, they got kicked out of Italy. So he found himself in France, was in Corsica, and the guy murdered a young German boy of 19 years old. And this Prince of Savoie, very powerful, of the high nobility, pure pharaohs, he never had any problems in France with the Justice Department. And he finally went to Switzerland in Stade. where also the Pedolansky, I call him Pedolansky, Roman Pedolansky, he's living also in Stade. All these pharaohs, they can go to Switzerland, because Switzerland is the neutral base where when these pharaohs, when they have problems with any other nation, they can go to Switzerland, it's neutral, and they're going to be protected. So the Prince of Savoy, he murdered someone, and he never went to prison. Pedolansky, he sodomized a young girl in America, he never went to prison, because he's safe in neutral Switzerland, and this is why it's called neutral. This is why all the NGOs, like the Red Cross, the United Nations, it's all in Switzerland. And if there's any peace talks to be done, it's being done in Geneva, which is the diplomatic capital of the world. And French, and they speak French there, because French is the language of the nobility. At the British court, they still speak French, many of them. The Prussian courts, they spoke French. Even the Russian courts, they spoke French. Richard the Lionheart, he couldn't even speak English. He only spoke French. And about Richard Lionheart, it's really interesting. Who is the most known, well-known mafia boss in the world because of the Hollywood? It's a question. So Don Corleone. In Italy, cuore, it means the heart. And leone, it means the lion. The heart, Don, it comes from Adonai. It means the Lord. It's a Hebrew word. Corleone, that means lion-hearted, Richard Lionheart. And actually, in Sicily, there is a town called Corleone, where Don Corleone, also in the video, the Godfather, where he came from, which is a real mafiosi town. Richard Lionhearted, he was 1 year in Sicily.
Have you ever seen a movie called The Lion in Winter?
No.
Oh, it's a great movie, but it shows you Richard the Lionheart and his brothers and the squabble over succession to the throne and primogeniture, and it's a really great family struggle to illustrate for people just exactly what it's like when it's known that one son is going to get everything, the title and all of the money, and what's left for the others.
How is it possible they have lions? Anyway, they never hear any lions in Europe. How did they know this in the Middle Ages? Because that's where they come from. They come from a place where there are lions, the Sphinx, they're pharaohs. And always in front of a castle or a coat of arms, they got two lions. It's there. It's one of their symbols. We had bears and wolves in Europe, never any lions. So it's also another proof that it's a foreign power. It's not domestic. This is what JFK actually was talking about. The internal enemy, the enemy within. They hide and they lie and they etc. And most of the crusaders, they went first to Sicily and then they took the boat, because the Knights Templars, they had a huge fleet. As in America, there's the Newport Tower, which is obviously done by the Knights Templars, because it's octagonal. They were already there before Columbus, before 1492. So most of them, they all went through Sicily. And I have never seen in my entire life such a density of Knights Templars commanderies and Teutonic Knights commanderies as in Sicily. There are so many. So what happened when the Knights Templars, being a Knights Templar, and all the Knights Templars, actually, they were of the nobility, which I haven't explained to you yet, but I will do that afterwards, if you want.
Yes.
What really is a Knights Templar, because I'm actually the only one in the world that explains what is a Knights Templar. And they were not allowed to have a girlfriend or be married or having children. It was not allowed. It was a brotherhood. And they were sodomites, as the French king had put out. And most of all, his state attorney, Guillaume de Nogaret. He was the most powerful man in the empire, a really intelligent man as well. He was the guy who prosecuted the Knights Templars and burned about 25 of them, as the last grandmaster, Jacques de Molay. So when the Crusades ended after the fall of Acres on May 18th, 1291, and then 2.5 months later they founded Switzerland on August the 1st, 1291, many of them remembered that they had such a good time in Sicily. It was a lot better than in the sandy, dry areas like in Jerusalem and all that, you know, with fighting and all that in the desert. Next to that, you know, Sicily was like a paradise, green and fruits and wine and beer and women and whatever. So many of them, they remembered that, and they, as they went back through Sicily, many of them, they stayed in Sicily, and they founded families, and they became the Mafia, because mm-hmm. the Mafia is definitely not Italian. Mm-hmm. The Italian people hate the Mafia. They are suffering under the Mafia. They deal drugs to the Italian children. They rape their women and prostitution and everything. And the word omerta, you know, the law of silence of the Mafia, it's not an Italian word. And it comes from one of the nine founders of the Knights Templars. There was Guillaume de Saint-Omer. Omerta, Saint-Omer.
Mm-hmm.
If you turn it around, you get omerta. And the Knights Templars, they had the laws of silence, because they were afraid of the French king who wanted to wipe them off the planet, you know. And it is the same, you know, the Knights Templars, they have their protector saint is Saint George.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you have the state of Georgia. And this is why you had the Georgia Guidestones. It's all because of Saint George.
Well, isn't it interesting that
King George, you know?
Yeah,
and the Mafia, their saint protector is Saint Michael, and they have the very same initiation rites, which is a blood ritual, as the Knights Templars do, and it's the same build-up, military build-up, with a commander and all this the Mafia has, as the Knights Templar do have. So the Mafia, the worldwide Mafia, the Cosa Nostra and the etc., they are just Knights Templars who have a family, and they are not Italian at all.
Well,
they bring all the drugs in America, like all these fentanyl or
fentanyl.
Whatever you call it.
Fentanyl,
yeah. All this stuff. They kill America, these Mafia, and they're in the government, and they are, Trump, he had to do with the Mafia and all this. And
there's a couple
all
of
related.
Things.
Everything is related.
It is.
How is it possible that the American police, they can't get rid of the Mafia?
Yes, I know.
Because the American police is full of Freemasons.
Also, if you think about it.
Out of the Knights Templars. Just as the Mafia does.
If you think about it, you
will never solve the problem.
I think
the only problem is to solve the fentanyl problem in America is to import the Taliban in America and put them in an American police uniform, because the Taliban, they forbid the drugs. They forbid it, and they still do it. They hate it. Yeah. Hello. Yeah.
Hi, sorry. I don't know what happened. It just they didn't like where we were going. We wanted to get rid of fentanyl, and they didn't like it.
when I said invite the Taliban, put them in the U.S. police uniform, tuck. We went there, right? Wow, what more proof do you want?
Yeah. Listen,
I don't want to solve the fentanyl problem. I just gave them the solution, and tuck, we went there, right?
But before we left the French, though, there were two things that crossed my mind, and sorry, but you made me think of the English and their story of St. George slaying the dragon. And then you've got, Sean, who are the Normans, for heaven's sake? You know what I mean? I mean, who are these people?
The nobility.
Yeah.
The nobility ruling over, and then there were the commoners, as usual. The commoners, they were some Nordic tribes and Vikings or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why they call them the Normans. But it was the nobility. You know.
Yeah.
It's always the nobility. And they all want to rule. They all want to be the emperor. But, you know, there are too many of them. So they fight amongst each other. You know? It's an endless fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got this problem. Well, I explained that to you now. At the same time, I'll explain about the Knights Templars, because
okay.
You have to know, within the nobility, there is a rule which is called the primogenitor. That means that only the firstborn son, he gets everything.
Yes.
He gets the land, the power, the concubines, the castle, everything. But of course, there were also second, third, and fourth sons, and sometimes up to 300. Not always with Mrs. Duchess, of course, due to the rape of our women. But through their mother, they knew that their father was the lord of the castle, or the duke, or the count, or the marquis, or whatever. So this is why there were so many conspiracies in the castle. Because the second, third, fourth sons, they were very angry because they were left with nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of backstabbings and poisonings. For the poisonings, they used aconite, you know, this little mm-hmm. flower. It's growing mm-hmm. here where I am as well. Very toxic. So the lord of the castle, the king or the emperor, the duke, he kicked all his brothers and half-brothers out of the castle because they want to kill him, you know, for the succession. So, but where do you go in the Middle Ages? Because in the Middle Ages, there were only three things. There was the castle, the people, and the church.
Yeah.
So the castle fell off, and aristocrats will never work. So they didn't want to be among the people. So the only thing that was left was the church. So the monasteries, where they could sleep until 12 o'clock, drink some wine, don't work at all, and talk with the other aristocrats without anything. This is why we have, in fact, two Knights Templars on one horse, because they were very poor, because they were the second, third sons. And not because they devoted themselves in poverty to Jesus, not at all. They were the richest men on the planet, and they still are. And so at a certain moment there in France, in the Abbey of Clairvaux, in Troyes, in the middle of France, at a certain and also in other monasteries, accumulated over hundreds of years, there were tens of thousands of second, third, fourth sons, poor nobility, robber barons, if you like, without any castle or anything, you know. So they said, we are in a monastery, which is a temple of God. So we are the Templars. And we're going to make a new system that any one of us can be the king for a period of 4, 5, or 7 years. And we're going to vote. And then they said none of us can vote because we all know what's going on. And this will lead, again, to internal strife and killing each other and conspiracies and everything. So we cannot vote ourselves. And then a sly guy around the round table, he said, oh, I've got a good idea. Why don't we let the people vote, the commoners, those stupid slaves, those stupid Europeans. Then, and at the same time, we transmit them that they are ruling themselves. Then they're happy, those stupid bastards. And this is what they called this new system of the horizontal rule. They called it the New World Order. And if there is a New World Order, logically, there must also be an old one. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a new one. And it would be very interesting to know what is then the Old World Order. Well, the Old World Order was the vertical rule, the feudal system of the king. And so there has never been, as we know, any real democracy for the people. The only democracy in the whole thing is that the people have the right to vote democratically just another aristocrat in a new aristocratic system, which is a perfect system because we don't see anymore that we're being ruled by a guy in a castle, which was very obvious. We don't know anymore by whom we're being ruled. It's completely behind the veil. You know, we can't see it. They disappear, they pop up again, and then they, it's a hidden system. It's absolutely perfect. Not the Republic. So they took for a slogan. Yeah.
You were saying they, put up a Republic and took as a slogan.
Yeah, the slogan was then Liberté, Fraternité, Égalité, you know, the liberty, freedom, equality, and fraternity. Wow, we know there's no liberty for the people.
Right.
Like 200 years after that, the French people didn't have the... Are you still there?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, the French people didn't have the freedom to avoid being murdered in Verdun in the First World War. So there is no freedom. So what does it mean? Well, it means equality. Now we in the nobility, we are all equal. There's no more difference between the primogenitor, the firstborn son, and the rest. No, equality. And fraternity, we're not going to do any more brother killings. We are all brothers. We're all equal. And this is why a Freemason lodge is a fraternity. This is where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And freedom, now we in the nobility, we all have the freedom to be the king for a period of 4, 5, or 7 years
mm-hmm.
to become the president. And this is why you've got the Statue of Liberty, which comes from liberty, equality, fraternity, as mm-hmm. it was given by the French, French Freemasons. And Lafayette, Marquis de Lafayette. I went filming his castle here in France a couple of years back. It's called La Grange, and which means the stables, funny enough. And so the pharaohs came, they built their castles, and they became the nobility here in Europe. Then they had an internal war amongst each other, and they the Knights Templars, also of the nobility, they took over all the power. And as the Knights Templars, they were a medieval military order. They needed a political wing to consolidate the power under peacetime. So they founded the Freemasons. So, and this is why the Freemasons, they show all this stuff from the pharaohs, the pyramids, the all-seeing eye, because that's where they come from. This is the whole story. Are you still there?
Yes, yes. No, okay. I'm just listening.
Yeah, I've got a problem with my battery. It isn't loading. I don't know what's happening.
Oh.
I've got everything plugged in, and it doesn't... I don't understand it.
Huh.
Well, maybe that's why... But anyway, you'll have it all recorded, huh?
Yes, so far so good. I'm watching my little virtual recorder like a hawk because I've lost recordings before, but I'm just sitting here staring at it.
It happened to me too. I did an interview and I was talking for hours, and then she said, "Oh, I'm sorry, it didn't work."
No, I've learned my lesson the hard way. So now when I'm talking to someone and recording, I never take my eye off the clock, the little counter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you know, like talking about the Middle East again, you know, we've got this problem with Hamas. They got finance in Switzerland. There are even pictures of the Hamas being in Swiss Parliament. I put it in my video, which is on my channel, Giure, G-I-U-R-E-H. And in fact, Hamas is an anagram for Sham, S-H-A-A-M. It's the same letters. And Sham, there was the Islamic State. And Sham is the caliphate, what they wanted, of Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, and Iraq altogether. This territory used to be the caliphate of Sham. And so it's not a coincidence that Hamas is exactly the same letters, and they want exactly the same thing, because a caliphate is the old world's order and a vertical rule, mm-hmm. whereas the JJ base of the Jaywalkers is a republic and a horizontal rule. And this is what it's all about. But the people don't know it. Not the Jaywalkers, the normal commoners, they don't know it. Not the normal Arabs, they have not a clue what it's all about. You know? And it's definitely not about religion. It's all about the nobility, you know. And they got all the money. They got all the money from the Emirates, from Qatar, from Dubai, from Saudi Arabia. And I don't think so much from Iran. They don't have so much money.
There was one thing that you said to Roseanne Barr about the word Nazi and the etymology of Nazi. You were saying that Nazi, we're told, comes from National Socialism. And you said the fascio-Islamicists, those other people, have put out a false etymology for the word Nazi. And I was just curious if you'd come across this. Alan was, he always cautioned people not to fall under the spell of spelling, but to hear the way a word sounds and to play with how it sounds. And so you have Nazi, which, you know, of course has the ancient Indian Hindu symbol, but you also have the word Nazi. Nasi, N-A-S-I, Nasi, which is a Hebrew word for prince. So again, you're talking about royalty.
Yeah. Yeah, and now they say, like, these Muslims and Islamists, they say Nazi comes from the word Nazi Zionism or something, which is complete nonsense.
Right, right.
Actually, the word Nazi comes from the Italian nazionalismo, because in Italian it's written with a Z or Z, as you mm-hmm. Americans call it, whereas in British English it's or in English it's written, or in German it's written with a T, but
yes.
In Italian they write it with a Z or a Z.
Yes.
So in Italy, with the fascists of Mussolini, they called these people short Nazis, you know. And then the Germans, they took it over, and now it became a completely German word. But it isn't. It's Italian. And actually, the Italians, you know, they always brought havoc over Europe. They were the ones who started with fascism, with Mussolini, before Hitler. They were the ones who did a genocide on the Celtic people with the Roman Empire. They murdered so many people with the Roman Empire. There's always this havoc coming out of the out of Italy, you know. And then you've got the mafia and all these things. And people talk about immigrants now in Europe, about Turks and Arabs. But the biggest immigrants in Northern Europe, actually, they are Italians. And nobody talks about it. Because the Italians, they are actually the people of Egypt. In Egypt, the Egyptians, they had the pharaohs, they were the nobility. Then they had their slaves, like the Jaywalkers. But there was also a people, a free people. And when the pharaohs, you know, like Cleopatra, she was married to Caesar, and then they all came over to Italy, and they basically left Egypt, you know. Of course, when the nobility of Egypt, the pharaohs and all their brothers and sisters and uncles and whatever, when they came to Italy, of course they took their people with them, you know, because they needed somebody to work for them, you know, with the nice marble, build up the Colosseum or whatever, you know, and the Roman pillars and the viaducts and everything. They are Pharaoh's people from Egypt. And these are the Italians, actually. They're not European. And I see it also when I'm hitchhiking. When I ask an Italian, you know, they always lie. They always, and they never take a hitchhike except when you have a skirt and nice legs, you know. They are so different. They are definitely not European. that's easier being taken for me hitchhiking by an Arab or a Muslim. They take me hitchhiking. Mm-hmm. But Italians, no, never. They are so different. And now they start again in Italy, you know, with fascism. It's really, they're starting again. And we can feel fascism coming up now. The people are tired of large immigration. Mm-hmm. They are tired of the left-wingers in America, in Europe. They are tired of the pink list killers, you know, a man and a man and these sort of things. So it's all planned. Of course it's all planned, as you know. And it all comes again from Italy again. Now it's fascism again, like before. I see it all happening again. History is repeating itself again and again. So the Italians, they are definitely the people of Egypt, of Pharaoh. And their base of Pharaoh is Switzerland, where the mafia also have all their money. But the Egyptians, they also had a people, a free people, you know. And they came to Italy to work for them.
I just wanted to ask you a question about Pinkless. Is that L-E-S-S or L-I-S-T?
A list, like blacklisted.
Okay, that's all right. That's what I thought you meant, but I wasn't sure. Okay, so yeah, the pink list.
Because I explained in my videos, and again, I do facts. Things you can prove by yourself. In the Nazi era, you know, there were so many pink list killers, like the head of the Hitler Youth. His name was Baldur von Schirach. He was a pink list killer, raping all these little boys, you know, of the Hitler Youth. Of course, of the nobility, high nobility, Baldur von Schirach. And one of his family members was even a governor or a senator in America. You know, they're all over the planet, you know. There was also a female Hitler Youth. It was called the Bund Deutscher Mädels, the BDM. And at the head was Jutta Rüdiger.
I've read about her. Yeah,
a female pink list killer.
Yes, obviously.
And then there was the head of the Sturmabteilung, you know, the stormtroopers. Mm-hmm. There was Ernst Röhm, another pink list killer. Well, I mean, about Hitler, I mean, I'm not so sure what he was, you know. I mean, we're pretty sure now that he was also a pink list killer. They all were, you know, and they love it, you know. We got all, there are two kinds of pink list killers, you know. You got this little, this sort of in pink sissy type sort of things, you know. But you got also the military type of pink list killers, you know, who like to dominate other men, you know, and rape him, like, you know. Just like the Knights Templars. And this is what the state attorney of the French king, Guillaume de Nogaret, what he knew. And he wanted to protect the people from it, you know. And that's just, this is... And because the Knights Templars won this internal war, this is why we have all these things going on here. And the whole hierarchy, all the armies, actually, and police, they all come out of the Knights Templars. And the head of the Nazi Templars is called Octagon. This is why all the badges in the army and police, they usually are octagonal. Even the police hats in New York, they are octagonal.
Can you
it's
just
all a representation, can a you, secret symbol of the Knights Templars in the American uniform?
Can you talk really quickly about, since you're on Octagon, can you talk about the obelisk, the tip of the obelisk, and circumcision?
Yeah, but that's I have to explain the story of Isis and Osiris. I can't just quickly. I would like to finish actually what I was saying about the pink list killers, and also the actual neo-Nazi organization. Like in Germany, you got the AfD, political neo-Nazi party, which are very strong, and they have seats in parliament. At the head, there is Alice Weidel. She's a pink list killer. And also in France, there was Florian Philippot, pink list killer. He was the second man in the Front National of Marine Le Pen here. In the Netherlands, well, you got this Geert Wilders. I don't know what he is, but he got his hair painted, you know, so that's quite obvious. Before, they had a guy in the Netherlands called Pim Fortuyn. I don't know how to pronounce that. He was a pink list killer. In France, there was this guy, Renaud Camus. A pink list killer living in a Templar's castle, and he wrote the book, The Great Replacement. about all the immigrants coming in. So he was also a neo-Nazi. And the guy in the Australian guy in New Zealand who wiped out a couple of years back all the Muslims in a mosque, he went and visited him just a couple of months before.
Really?
So they're all pink list killers. And I mean, this, I say sodomy is the essence of hierarchy. I mean, hierarchy, what is hierarchy? Well, you fuck up your subordinates, you know, so you and you're being fucked up by your hierarchy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what these pink list killers like, you know, they get a hard one of it, you know. It's like doing the act for them, you know, being fucked up by your superior. It's being like being sodomized for them. They really get a hard one from it, you know. So sodomy is the essence of hierarchy, the entire hierarchy. It's so unnatural, and it's based upon sodomy of the Knights Templars.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what the French king tried to warn us from.
Sean,
this is... You've got this hard sort of pinkless killers. You find them everywhere in military organizations, yeah, neo-Nazi organizations.
I know that you haven't...
They love it, you know?
I know that you're not really familiar with Alan Watts' work, and you have not read his book, but he goes into this in great detail. The deviant class, he calls them. And he talks about exactly what you're talking about. They are trained from an early age by sexual abuse. They're brought into the fold by sodomy. This is whole system runs. This is how the pink list system works.
Yeah, it's horrible. I wanted to protect my children from it, you know, and when my boys, I've got two boys with my wife, when they were like 2 or 3 years old, I knew when they go to school, they're going to tell them, you know, everything is good, drugs are good, pink list killers are good, you know, sodomy is good.
Yep.
And I wanted to be the first one to tell them what exactly is good and what is not good. But how are you going to tell a 3-year-old child, you know? You can't tell him not to pop his friend, you know, like in school, like 3 years old, you know. So, and after a couple of weeks thinking it over, I found an answer. And I told my boys, I told them, a man and a man don't kiss each other. And there was a thing they could understand, you know.
Right.
So in the evening, I want to kiss them goodnight, you know. And they said, no. They didn't want to be kissed anymore, you know. And I was so happy. I was more happy than sad, you know. I could never kiss my boys anymore, but they got the message right through, you know.
Yes.
So I was happy.
Yeah. No, I mean, see what they're doing, and I mean, that you at least were able to get through to them at that young age, because what they're doing now, as soon as they go to kindergarten, they're being told, and this is just outrageous sexual abuse, they're being told that they should be doing this. They're 4 and 5 years old, and this is what they should be doing it. And if they're not doing that, there's something wrong with them. That's abuse.
Well, listen, you probably saw this Eurovision song.
Oh, I sure did. Ugh.
You saw this Irish satanic stuff.
Yes.
And the Swiss, they won it.
Yes, right? And you know what?
Yeah.
Do you know what,
A guy in a pink skirt.
Yes.
And his name is Nemo.
Yes.
Nemo, in Latin, it means nobody.
Yes.
But Nemo is also an anagram, and it's also reversed speech for omen, like in the video or the movie, The Omen. You know, it's satanic.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Omen. Nemo. And the European Song Contest, it's being organized from another organization. I don't recall the name now. I've written it down somewhere. Which is also in Switzerland, just as the Red Cross and the United Nations, all the NGOs, everything is in Faroe's neutral base in Switzerland.
Yeah. You know, I tell you, Sean, I spent about an hour and a half watching all of the semi-finalists. There were like 30-some-odd music videos, and I knew that Nemo was going to win. I even featured it in a video that I did, in a talk I did with someone. I knew that that song and that person would win
simply,
because this is what they're pushing down people's throats.
Oh, it's a conspiracy, because before they used to vote, you know, every country votes, you know. But now they have people call to a line, and they get some money also for it. So those people who call up the most, who are organized, like the Pink List killers, they will win. It's a complete, it's a conspiracy, the whole thing, you know. It's, it has nothing to do with quality. It's only quantity. The ones who call up the most, and all these Pink List killers, of course they do, they win. It's the same, like 8 years ago, there was this Austrian guy with a beard and a skirt. You know, I made a video about it. I called him Frankenstein. Yeah, the video is still there.
Yeah, it's horrible. It is horrible. I mean, you know, See, there's one thing that I wanted to make sure. I could carry this conversation on, but I have another a talk that I'm doing in a short while, so I wanted to make sure that we got a few other little things touched on. But the one thing that I wanted to say is again, because I was able to listen to the Roseanne interview start to finish, and you said in there, you were having this conversation with her during COVID, and you were talking about how COVID was started and why it was used. And I think it's very clear, if you see what's going on over in the Middle East, if you see what's happening with Russia and Ukraine, and by the way, Switzerland is hosting a peace conference about that next month. So, but the whole brain chipping, you brought this up earlier, Musk and the whole computer brain interface, we're steamrolling ahead, because right now, this ruling aristocracy of deviants, their goal is to no longer have to play around with the peasants anymore. They don't want to feed us. They don't want to clothe us. They don't have use for us as we're going into AI and robotics and so forth. They don't really need us around. And the next phase is rapidly coming down. And that's... you said something in another little video that I was watching. You were talking about some place, some castle that you said, there's only 22 there, and if I could find, you said there's 22 players in a, maybe it was a soccer game or something like that. You said people can't tear themselves away from the sporting event and come out here and join me in doing this. I'm here all by myself with my backpack doing this alone, because nobody will do this with me.
Yeah. Yeah, and also the it's all based in Switzerland. Also, Putin's girlfriend, Alina Kabayeva, she's living in Geneva, Switzerland. His children were born in Switzerland. And why? Because where he's coming from, St. Petersburg, this is the area where the Teutonic Knights were. They were waging another 200 years of crusades after the crusades towards the Middle East. And as the Knights Templars, they were forbidden, and they were speaking French. And as they went to Switzerland, they just went over into the Teutonic Knights and speaking German. So Putin, that's why the mafia Putin belongs to, it's from the Teutonic Knights. The whole area is a Teutonic Knight area, so that this is quite obvious. And actually about Roseanne, I changed Roseanne, you know, because, as you know, Roseanne, she was having also Pink List killers in her show, and even children who were sex operated. And I met her Hollywood manager. He came to Paris in a black limousine with a driver, a chauffeur, and we met up. She sent him to me a couple of years back. I filmed him from the back, actually. He was a friendly man, but, you know. But Roseanne, it's not because she's like an alleged Satanist, as many people said, you know. She's just a nice woman, and she wants to give everybody a life, you know. And she thought, okay, these people need a life as well. But this summer, because of my videos and showing that I call it the whole catch, because there's another word I can't pronounce, when they murdered the jaywalkers in the war, they put them in they caught them and put them in a hole. So I call it the whole catch. It also starts with an H, just as the forbidden word. So I've proven her through my videos that a huge part of the whole catch was being done by the pink list killers, because in Judaism, pink list killer is strictly forbidden. And so the jaywalkers, they were an enemy of their behavior. And so this winter, she told me, she said, Sean, I have to admit, you were right.
Well, this is a very difficult one. This is very difficult. I understand that, because I saw that interview that you did with her, I looked her up. Obviously I know who she is, but I saw there that she had been a big proponent, a big pusher of the whole LGBTQ agenda, big supporter of that. And you see there that in her biographical information, she has a brother and a sister who are that. Mm-hmm. And she does come across as someone who is loving and concerned about the young generation. So I am glad to see that you have put her to a different way of thinking. Because Hollywood is rife with that. And a lot of people just go along and accept it because, I mean, nobody wants to be seen as hateful or intolerant.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Are you still there?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, this winter she told me that that I was right after all. They had a huge part, the pink list killer, in the genocide on the jaywalkers during the Second World War. Also today with all the neo-Nazi organizations. Yeah, they hate people that either by their religion, either Christianism or Judaism or Islam, who have this sort of sexual behavior forbidden, mm-hmm. they want to eradicate them. You know, mm-hmm. it's very bad. And at the meantime, they're smiling through their teeth like a wolf, you know, like, mm-hmm. they're smiling in our faces, but they want to murder us, you know. And well, that's why I call them pink list killers. They even walk around with T-shirts, kill the patriarchy.
Well, exactly.
And Google doesn't do anything against it, or YouTube. You know, for them, it's all okay.
Oh, absolutely, because, a white male is the least protected on the planet, the most persecuted and the least protected on the planet. There was something else that you said going back to that interview, which just kind of made me laugh. I was looking for, in the very short amount of time that I had to get up to speed on what you were talking about, I was looking for places, where do we agree, what common ground is there, and so forth. And I really liked what you had to say about Western women, because I've thought about this quite a bit. It really is completely in line with the thinking that I have about Western women going back for a long time, a thousand years. And it's not popular, but you said to Roseanne something about the natural order and the patriarchy, and she took issue with that. And you used a term with her that satisfied her. You said, well, men and women are complementary. Now, I have no problem with patriarchy, because I believe that there is a natural hierarchy which is healthy for the survival of a tribe. And the, mm-hmm. the natural hierarchy would be you're created, and the man is seeking to reconnect to that and to be aware of that. And the natural order, just as you said to her, the woman is making the nest to lay her egg, feathering the nest, and the man is protecting her from predators and enemies. This is the natural order, and we're so far away from it that it's almost even impossible to have a conversation about that. Because the woman, and Hitler knew this. He said, go for the woman, bypass the man. This is technique that has been used by this deviant ruling elite for a long, long time. Bypass the man.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, who's dying in all these wars? I mean, the men are dying, not the women. At the front in Verdun, in the First World War, 1 million men died in a couple of months. I mean, how is this possible? I mean, after 10,000 dead, you know, the general would have said, okay, let's try another strategy. I mean, but they just went on and went on. It was deliberately. They sent the most intelligent man there, you know, because the man is like the bull. He's defending the nest while the woman, she's too occupied with the egg, so to speak, in the nest and look, taking care of the little ones. So she can't at the same time also take care of any dangers. That's the occupation of the man. It's just the way it is, you know. It's all complementary, and that's
so
the beautiful thing.
What does a woman do in the First World War? She's going around passing out white feathers on behalf of the ruling elite to shame the man into going to war. That's what she did. You know, white feather, they're cowards. They won't go and fight this fight.
I don't understand. What was it with the white feathers? What was it, in England or in Germany?
That was big in England. That was huge to shame the at World War One. If you had not enlisted... the campaign. It was a huge campaign that the women passed out white feathers to shame their men, husbands, boyfriends, fiancés, brothers.
Who didn't go to war.
Who didn't go to war for whatever reason in the early days. They were shamed with this white feather campaign.
Oh, that's horrible.
It's horrible. It's just terrible. And I wonder how those women felt when their men didn't come home. But that's been drummed out of them because the state is there to take care of them. So it's okay. They can just find a different man or live off the state.
Well, this is actually the essence of Adam and Eve and
the
snake.
Yes, it is.
And where is the snake? What does Pharaoh have on his head?
Yep.
You know, he has a cobra snake on his head, and he's talking to the women and saying, oh, listen, you know, if you want to have all the power, then kill your man, kill the patriarchy, and then you can raise your sons and you from scratch when the man is dead. But this is what it means, the patriarchy. And this is what you asked before and what I wanted to explain you later on, which I will do now. This is the story of Isis, who was married to Osiris, and she was pregnant with their son Horus. And then all of a sudden, the devil came, Seth. He came flying and he said, Osiris was not there at the moment. He said, Isis, if we kill your man, you can raise your children new, your child new from scratch. He will always be obedient to you. Just as we do make a German shepherd out of a wolf or an obedient dog and... but we have to kill the patriarchy, kill the man. Just as the pink list killers, they walk around with this T-shirt, kill the patriarchy, because they know exactly what they're talking about, you know. And then Isis, she replied, oh, no, no, are you crazy? Go away, he's my husband. Woof, he flew away, Seth. He's the lord of the underworld, eh? And then a couple of months later, she was already much more pregnant with her son Horus, and she had an argument with Osiris, and then she said, Seth, where are you? I'm here. What do you want? So she said, oh, he was mean to me. We had an argument. I don't want this man anymore. He said, okay, I'll do everything I can. So he murdered Osiris, and he chopped him up into 13 pieces. Then the friends of Osiris, and he threw all the 13 pieces into the River Nile. And then the friends of Osiris, they tried to fish up all the pieces of Osiris and to glue it all together, but they could never find the 13th part. which was his sexual organ. And this is why they created the obelisk, which is the 13th part of the... and that's why obelisks, usually, they are put into 13 parts. Just as the obelisk at the Dealey Plaza, where they murdered JFK, I think there's also 13 parts in it. And this is all because of this story. And this is what I call the Horus Matrix. This is why we have all these wars and those pinkless killers walking in T-shirts killed the patriarchy, because they're all demonized. They know exactly what it is about. And at the same time, they're smiling into our faces. And, oh, we are so friendly, and, you know, but they want to murder us.
Yes, yeah.
So they can raise the children new from scratch.
Yeah.
Mold them without a tradition from father to son, telling his son, like, listen, my son, now you're 12 years old, I'm going to tell you what life is all about. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's already gone, and we can see it, especially the white race.
Yes.
All the other races, they still have their traditions, except the white race. We don't have any more tradition.
Yeah.
It's the most destroyed race in the world.
It's, a long time, millennia, we have been run by this deviant brotherhood, this deviant. Yeah. It's very sad. Yeah. You know, Sean, I just hate to have to wrap this up, but I'm going to have to do that. And I'm hoping that you'll join me again for another conversation. I just have to start another talk in 10 minutes and grab a glass of water before I do that.
Oh, that's a hard one.
Well,
okay.
So I really regret having to wrap it down, because this has been very interesting for me, and I hope it has been for other listeners. I want to just say before we close, you've mentioned your website. Is there anything else that you want? I'll be sure. What I do, because you don't know this, I will post this as an audio in a podcast form and put it up on the website, cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And what I do is I like to illustrate them. You'll use pictures. I'll probably use some footage from the videos that you've made where it fits in. So I'll make a video, and then I will try to find links of the different talks, like the horizontal and the vertical of the church and state. Whatever I find of yours, I'll use that to illustrate, and then I will also include those links. But if there's anything else before we close that you wanted to share with listeners about where your work can be found, I know that you have another site that I visited briefly last night entitled Homeland Security.
Yeah, Homeland Security, yeah. Yeah, I will send you all my channels later on. Yeah, for the ones, you can put my email in there as well if you want.
Okay.
But only for the ones who wants to organize with me and maybe set up a resistance or something, because it's really time to do something. And so anyone who wants to come to France, for instance, we can put up a resistance, and you can contact me.
Okay, and the email address that I have for you right now, that's okay for me to post on my sites and channels?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay.
I've got it in any one of my channels. Yeah.
Okay, all right, that's great. Well, Sean, I thank you so much for the generosity of your time and your lifetime accumulation of knowledge that you've been have shared with this audience. I am sincerely appreciative of it.
Yeah, and let's honor Alan, because this is sort of a twist of destiny that our contact started with Alan, who phoned me up 14 years ago. I sent him these texts, and now it's like a circle closed. Yeah. So, yeah, let's finish this conversation like honoring Alan.
You've just touched on the whole purpose of my life is honoring Alan and singing his praises until the day I die. I am a faithful woman.
And right on, my sister.
He was amazing to me, and I just want people to know about his work.
Okay, very nice.
All right, you take care. I hope that you'll join me again down the road, and I thank you again.
Yeah, I thank you all. Bye-bye, everyone.
All right, bye-bye. Take care.
You too.
All right. So I am not sure when I'll be posting that. That was really generous amount of time from Sean Ross. And I'll get this up as soon as I can illustrate this mammoth video. And this will get plugged in. I've got every Thursday spot filled up for a few weeks, but I didn't want to wait. So as soon as I have this finished, this will just be a little extra real history. And I'll talk to you all later. Thank you. Bye.
I've got something that the world didn't give me, and the world cannot take it away. And I've got something that the world didn't give me, and the world cannot take it away. Well, it is love, sweet love, oh, sent to me from my Father up above.